12 leads are better than one. I use this phrase as a mantra to remind us how easy it is to be fooled about the appearance and width of the QRS complex when the only information you are given is a single monitoring lead. Developing a healthy respect for this mantra will serve you well in avoiding a number of common errors that could have potentially disastrous consequences. For example, imagine you are given a long lead 2 rhythm strip that shows a regular narrow complex tachycardia at a fast rate, say about 160 per minute. No P waves are seen. Your patient is hemodynamically stable and appears to be tolerating the rhythm well. Does the fact that the QRS complex looks narrow in this long lead 2 monitoring lead rule out the possibility of VTAC? Clearly, if we could know that the QRS complex was truly narrow, this would define the rhythm as supraventricular, be it from atrial flutter, atrial tachycardia, or some type of reentry SVT rhythm. The problem is that sometimes a part of the QRS complex may lie on the baseline, in which case the QRS may look like it is narrow in the one lead you are looking at, but in reality actually be quite wide. The fact that your patient is hemodynamically stable does not in any way rule out the possibility of VT. Although many patients in VT will be hypotensive and quickly decompensate, a surprising number of such patients will remain alert, normotensive, and relatively asymptomatic despite being in VTAC for a period of not only minutes, but even hours or longer. So hemodynamic stability does not rule out the possibility that the rhythm is VT. The solution to the problem is simple. If your patient is in a sustained, regular tachycardia, and this patient is, or at any time during the treatment process, becomes hemodynamically unstable, that is, hypotensive, having severe chest pain, or shortness of breath, or mental status change, then regardless of whether the tachycardia is VTAC, or some form of supraventricular tachycardia, immediate synchronized cardioversion is essential. But if instead your patient in tachycardia is and remains hemodynamically stable, then try to obtain a 12-lead ECG during the tachycardia. Doing so has a number of advantages that extend beyond the acute event. First, about half of the time in my experience, by the time you hook up and record the 12-lead ECG, your patient will have spontaneously converted out of the tachycardia, in which case you get to look good without having had to do anything. Second, 12 leads are better than one. By getting a 12-lead ECG during the tachycardia, you have 11 additional leads to look at, which can be invaluable for determining the likely etiology of the tachycardia. As I mentioned earlier, a part of the QRS may lie on the baseline, in which case the single lead that you are looking at might suggest that a rhythm is supraventricular, when in fact it would be obvious that the QRS is wide if you had a chance to look at other leads. As I've emphasized in previous audio pearls, assessment of QRS morphology by looking at multiple leads can be extremely helpful for distinguishing VT versus some form of supraventricular tachycardia. Looking at 12 leads might also reveal atrial activity that might not have been evident from looking at a single lead rhythm strip. And then there is the issue of using the oscilloscope on a bedside cardiac monitor. In my experience, the rhythm you see on a bedside monitor can sometimes be confusing as to width of the QRS complex in the tachycardia you are treating. I've seen this go both ways. That is, I've been at the bedside when the oscilloscope on the cardiac monitor suggests that the QRS is wide, when in reality, when we get a hard copy printout from the ECG machine, it turns out that the QRS complex was not wide, and that instead of VT, we were dealing with a supraventricular rhythm. And I've seen the opposite occur, when the oscilloscope on the cardiac monitor suggests that the QRS is narrow, but when we get a hard copy printout from the ECG machine, it turns out that the QRS is really wide. So what we would have thought to be an SVT, if all we had looked at was the cardiac monitor, in reality turned out to be VT. Once again, the solution is simple. Get a hard copy printout from an ECG machine as soon as you can so that it becomes easy to verify whether the QRS is wide or narrow. I'll conclude with a point that I alluded to a moment ago, namely that obtaining a 12-lead ECG during the tachycardia may have a number of advantages that extend beyond the acute event. By this I mean that sometimes it may simply not be possible to establish with certainty the etiology of a tachycardia from a single 12-lead ECG obtained during the tachycardia. But this 12-lead obtained during the tachycardia may still prove highly insightful after the rhythm is converted. When you go back and compare the 12-lead during tachycardia with either a previous tracing or with the post-conversion tracing, doing so may finally allow definitive diagnosis after the acute event, which may prove invaluable when deciding on long-term management.